Welcome, everybody. This is wonderful. The first of the Heritage Matters webinars. What is so wonderful about it is it's not often that you have an artist and the CEO of an institution actually batting for you. By the way, he plays cricket too, so that's a good thing. So I'm going to, you know, further ado, hand over to Dr. Anunuya Chaubey, Provost and CEO of Anant National University, where we are based. Over to you, Dr. Chaubey.
Thank you, Umar. It's really heartening to see the kind of participation we have, and this is exactly what is needed in today's context. You know, we, of course, you know, say physically are not, it's not possible for us to come together, but virtually, I think it's really tremendous to find so many people collecting here and responding to this opportunity. So first, greetings on the World Heritage Day, and welcome to the first Heritage Matters webinar being presented by the International Center for Inclusive Cultural Leadership at Anant National University in collaboration with International Council for Monuments and Sites. Welcome to you all. And we are all of us in it together. So there's nothing new that I'm going to say. Lockdown is a reality for all of us. And it's quite obvious that, you know, sir, what we always took for granted, the underpinning of the heritage, which is a common context for us all, the underpinning being the communality, you know, say we would always be together, you know, one person was never too far away from the other person, you know, say we would always be collaborating, we would always be planning things together, we would even be fighting together, you know, always needed people to be together. And that is something that has been taken away from us. And I think it's quite disconcerting. Heritage, togetherness, tradition, culture, we have always been in the thick of it. You know, we have been so close to it that we often thought that there was nothing around it where when it actually, you know, so always, you know, so kept determining us. I'm sure that all of you have heard of the great English poet writing in English, William Butler Yeats, who in a poem, you know, say Byzantium, had referred to, he didn't use the word heritage, but he did talk about monuments of unaging intellect, something that was eternal. You know, so this is an expression of the human soul. And there is absolutely no boundary, you know, that would make this soul, give this soul a culture or a region or a language or a religion. Infinite, you know, heritage. Both tangible, it's also a product of the human soul, human imagination, human capacity to reinvent itself. And so that was William Butler Yeats, Monuments of Unaging Intellect. And in another poem, you know, I think it's The Second Coming, same poet, he talks about ceremonies of innocence that defines our civilization, that defines our culture. How we have refined our mode of living, how we have refined our ways of connecting with the world, how we have refined and made sophisticated, you know, so the way we perceive our world, the way we treat our world, ceremonies of innocence. Although the context in that particular poem, The Second Coming, is a little different because he believes that this, these ceremonies of innocence, our culture is threatened by the rising blood-dimmed tide of violence and injustice. I think we are at this particular point in time faced with a crisis, although it's not violent, but it is, I think, you know, it's some kind of a different darkness, you know, violent, of course, you know, so it's quite threatening. But then, you know, what we all know is that we have this capacity to rebound. We have this capacity to reinvent ourselves, to reinvent our world. We need to fight back. And what is going to come to our rescue is what we have been in the past, what determines our present, and how we are going to use the two to determine our future. And this is what Anant National University is dedicated to draw from every conceivable domain of knowledge, to draw from every conceivable domain of experience. Nothing is, outside our ken. We are truly inclusive. You know, it's at the center that Professor Galla runs, and it's about being inclusive. We are all human. We share, we belong to a common humanity. So everything is included, say what you think is something that I think, if I don't know about it, it's your responsibility to inform me about it, to let me join your world. And my responsibility is to bring you into my world. And this is what the Anand National University focuses on. It wants to emerge working collaboratively with all of you, with everyone across the world from each nook and cranny, share your knowledge, share your experience, become a family, become inclusive to give ourselves a new direction, a new hope, and emerge with happiness and health and joy. And emerge as a center of interdisciplinary research, work, collaborative working. And that is what we are going to do. And I would like to congratulate, Sir Professor Galla and his team, to have taken this initiative, to have created this platform where so many of us have come together, because, sir, this challenge is real for us. And the challenge to reinvent ourselves is also real for us. So I'm looking forward now, for this webinar to help us explore new ideas, to help us find new strategic directions, for a reimagined future. How in the coming times, in spite of challenges, in spite of new threats, so we would still live to rejoice and work together. Maybe, that the silver lining out here that I see is for all the world to realize that we essentially are just one family. What threatens one community is something that threatens all of us. And this is where design thinking, this is where heritage comes into play, whether tangible, intangible. We know that all our galleries are shut, all our monumental sites are shut, but the intangible aspect of culture is still alive. Nobody can stop it. And this webinar is dedicated to coming together and finding these new directions. I hope we come up with something great, something very useful, and we continue to think, discuss, plan, and, come up with an answer. Over to you, Amar. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Ananoya Chiaobe. Those of you who just joined, that's Dr. Ananoya Chiaobe, Provost and CEO of Anant National University, where the International Center for Inclusive Cultural Leadership has been established. And it's Anant National University that's hosting this this webinar. We have over 300 people registered. There are about 180 have logged in already. People registered, they've registered from more than 63 countries, as I can work out now. Hey, that's wonderful. The ICOMOS is our partner. The former president of ICOMOS India, Professor Rohit Jigyatsu, has joined us a couple of minutes ago from Rome, from International Center for Conservation and Restoration in Rome. He's also UNESCO chair from Japan, so he shuttles between the two places. But right now he's grounded like all of us. But first, let me thank you, Dr. Chiaobe. Thank you for your support. It's very rare that the head of an institution, a university, takes such interest as you do in heritage. And it's a pleasure and it's an honor. Thank you so much. Now, I just want to come back to, yesterday, the French president, Macron, Emmanuel Macron, he made a very passionate speech. He's always deeply philosophical in the way he expresses himself. And he basically said, "What we don't know what it's going to be like tomorrow. Nothing has ever has happened like what has happened now. So how do we prepare for tomorrow? So we don't know. And he said that this is totally unprecedented. At least in our lifetimes, it's unprecedented. In recent memory, it's unprecedented. But within this context, how do we position ourselves in safeguarding heritage in all its manifestations? It's a huge challenge. And this is something that the International Council for Monuments and Sites takes on board all over the world. People are celebrating. Marking is a better word because celebrating sounds very different. And so this is wonderful. Now, the three things that come to my mind as I was preparing for this is that if you don't know what tomorrow is going to be like, how do we prepare for it? If that is the case, how do we understand and value what is heritage tomorrow? Because we've been decolonizing the heritage discourse, we've been challenging, we've been contesting, and we've been coming up with a whole range of modes and modalities of heritage management. But this is a totally different scene, what we face next. And in doing so, will we be able to integrate the tangible and intangible, which has been a challenge for us for some time? How do we integrate the mobile and immovable, the tangible and the intangible, and the natural and cultural? Because for a lot of us coming from Asia or Africa, there is no dichotomy between nature and culture. It was a colonial dichotomy that we deal with as a legacy. So the first thing is, what does heritage mean, you know, in this future context? The second thing is that, how do we actually sort of move forward when we are moving to digital very quickly? In fact, one of the things that's happened is that whether it's universities, whether it's museums, whether it's heritage institutions, World Heritage Sites, like Nizamuddin Basti did a wonderful program today at lunchtime in Delhi, digitally, we're all becoming, partly because we have a choice, partly because we don't have a choice, we're becoming internet savvy, we're becoming digital savvy. But then when we move on after the post-COVID, we will go into a multi-mode operation. We'll both be dealing with virtual as well as the digital and integrating. It's exciting in a way because it challenges a whole range of things. And last, the third thing that comes to mind is the whole notion of cultural democracy. In the whole UN decolonizing process, especially in the 1960s, you know, we started getting this cultural democracy discourse, which expanded with a tremendous amount of diversity across the world. And having been a former director of the National Affirmative Action Program in Australia, I can tell you that it's not easy to diversify the mainstream discourse, because there's always the elite discourse, there's always a subaltern, and how do you bring all these together is a huge challenge. So how do we deal with it tomorrow? You know, that's my third point. And here I just want to finish by referring to the well-known anthropologist, former provost of the New School in New York University, Professor Arjuna Padurai. He started a wonderful project called Pukar, you know, in Mumbai. His argument was for a long time, and quite rightly now it's coming to the front, that for too long we've talked about globalization, you know, mainly from the point of view of the top 20% that is actually empowered by globalization, which has the capabilities and capacities to engage with globalization. But the bottom 20% and the rest are also impacted upon by globalization. But we don't necessarily think about that bottom 20%. So his, you know, whole argument which he has developed is called grassroots globalization. So how does tomorrow's heritage discourse, you know, become relevant, engage with grassroots globalization, especially in the face of a very tight financial situation and need to rehabilitate institutions? How do we deal with, you know, community-based safeguarding of heritage schools. So those are just three points that come to my mind. And welcome, Professor Vinay Kumar, the Director General of Anthropological Survey of India, has just joined us from Calcutta. There are many amazing people joining us, PhD students, master's students, academics. There are quite a few doctoral students and eminent people. Everybody has come together. This is what the digital domain does, is bring us all together, as Dr. Chaubey said. With that note, I'd like to ask, you know, our first panelist, Dr. Benny Kuriakose. Benny is a very well-known conservation architect in India and elsewhere. But what makes him so unique and special is he builds on indigenous knowledge systems. He builds on local knowledge systems. And he's also one of the few heritage conservation architects, like Professor Rohit Jigyatsu, who is online from Rome. He's one of the few who has experience of working with disaster preparedness. Over to you, Dr. Benny Kuriakose.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Thanks, Anand National University, for inviting me. I'm just trying to link COVID with the heritage, or what we can do, or what are the lessons that we can try to learn from the present crisis. One is that COVID issue is a global issue, global crisis. It has affected the poor, it has affected the rich, it has affected the third world countries, or it has affected the rich countries. In fact, it has affected more the rich countries as part of it. And one of the consequences, or one of the things that we see, people are closing down their boundaries. US has banned flights from Europe. Even within India, Kerala has banned people coming from Tamil Nadu or Karnataka. Karnataka has banned people coming from Kerala. So, I mean, we are seeing a phenomenon which we have never experienced before. Here we have something what is known as lockdown, which I've never heard about. First time I'm hearing this word itself. So, I mean, a lot of changes are happening. Now, I mean, this crisis is an ongoing crisis, very immediate, cause and effect is very clear. But there is another crisis which is just around the corner. We thought that the climate change will be a problem only by 2100. But recent reports have come that by 2050, it will be very, very much an issue. Many of the cities will be facing problems. But I would like to think that the problem is becoming even more closer. And the similarity is that climate change is also a global issue. But one important aspect of the climate change is that if the problem comes, the problem is already there, but the problem becomes very critical. We cannot close down boundaries. Now we are trying to close down, each nation is trying to show its this thing, and there it is. That the problem is very different. Now, one thing we see, as at least in India, we see communities on act. Communities are acting, because it is not a personal issue. When you have other health issues, many of the health issues, for example, US as a country has closed down in many of the public health systems. And for example, NHS, which was very prominent 30 years ago, or 40 years ago, now it is becoming less redundant, and it has created a problem. Now health is, it is very clear with the COVID, health is not a personal issue. It is a community problem. Society has to act. And similar, climate change is also equally an important issue, or more important, it affects everybody. And that is what has led to the present situation. Now COVID, I mean, I've just seen a news report saying that Germany has reached its goal because lockdown has cut down the emission of the greenhouse gases. You see a WhatsApp video in Punjab, Ludhiana or Jalandhar, I don't remember, where you can see the Himalayan ranges. You can see peacocks going through the busy roads in Trivandrum. I mean, monkeys coming into the towns, which has never happened. So all these things are happening as part of it. But most of the governments across the world have realized the importance of the COVID issue. Although we have the Brazilian president, yesterday's newspaper, he sacked the health minister for having the lockdown. We have the US president saying something slightly different. So all these people, I mean, we have these things, but I think that once the lockdown is over, things will come back to normal. But I hope this issue will create more awareness on the issue of climate change, because that is a problem which the politicians are not aware, the governments are not aware, the industry, the construction industry as well as, of course, there are a lot of architects and climate scientists and talking about it, trying to make it very clear to everybody. But this is a problem which is becoming.
So, Dr. Benny, you mentioned normal. Everything will come back to normal. So, what is the normal or new normal, as one could say?
Yeah, at least.
Especially for the heritage sector.
Now, coming back to the heritage sector, I'll come back to that issue in the next part. Normal things, people will come back to normal life. People will take the cars. The greenhouse emissions will be back to normal. Whatever is coming, but here, it is a pointer to us how we should address the climate change and the urbanization issues. I think the de-urbanization has to happen. It will be a very counter-urbanization or de-urbanization has to happen. The problem of the migrant workers, which Bombay and Kerala and all these places people are facing, we have to look at the whole policy change has to happen, that de-urbanization. Otherwise, the world will not be able to survive. It is not just a COVID issue. It will be a climate change issue. And I this is the point where the Gandhiji statement, which he made in 1909 in Hind Swaraj, becomes very, very, very relevant. There is enough for everybody's need, but not for everyone's greed. And also John Muir has said 100 years ago, there is no blind opposition to progress, but we have to oppose the blind progress. I think the lockdown of 1.5 months has shown that nothing much is going to happen. I mean, this will prompt many of the governments to take a different stand on climate change. And that is very, very important. Otherwise, we are poised for a bigger disaster or a series of disasters. We can find, COVID-19, the steps which have been taken by the political leadership, instead of taking when the crisis comes, they have to take steps right at the beginning. Right at the beginning, already the time has gone past. This is the last chance that we have. And we might not be able to reverse the climate change. Although in 1990, Kyoto Protocol, everything said we have to maintain it or bring it down. It is not going to happen. We might be taking steps now to adapt to the climate change, but let us learn from the COVID lessons. I mean, nothing much is going to happen. And here is where the heritage has a major role to play, because it's time that we stop building new buildings. It's time that we look at new policies on urbanization. It is time that we look at it. All the existing theories are going wrong in the next 20 years or 30 years. And the climate change issues, all this urbanization theories, and everything will go wrong. We need new sociological studies. We need new anthropological studies. We need to foresee these things. And these are things which are going to be, and I think heritage will be the answer for the next stage of development of the world. Because we will not be able to build new buildings. We have to conserve the existing buildings. Recycling the existing buildings and the existing cities is the best green means of, or the best sustainable way of doing things. And that's why I say it is very, very, very important that we are doing. In 1980s, I thought we'll have to buy bottled water. Now we are buying bottled water without any, you can find even in village, rural areas, bottled water, Bisleri water. And it is not going to be far when we are going to buy oxygen or good quality air. Delhi, it is happening. Many of the cities, it is happening. Things are going to be it is important that the scientists not only work on the climate change, it is very, very important that people work on how to change the policies, how to convince, how can we get adapted to the changes which is going to happen. And COVID is one of the experiences that we have to look at. We should learn from the experience of the COVID, and it will tell various things, because always we thought that economic development is the development. Now we know the whole economy is down. Everything is shut down. To me, I think nothing much has happened. The environment has got better. The air has become more pure. So we have to look at, we have to tighten our belts in the society. And there is no point in trying to tighten it at an individual level. It has to happen at the community level. And that is where we have to learn from COVID. The countries which have been successful in handling COVID, they have done it at the community level and not at a personal level. And it has not been done by force. The community and the social thing is, society is very, very important. I think the lessons learned from COVID should be applied in climate change. That's what I have to say for the time being.
Thanks, Benny. Thanks, Dr. Benny Kuriakose. You said no new buildings, recycling. You've emphasized so aptly, you know, that we, climate change being the underlying thing for everything that's happening now and for the future, and how we have to rethink the very notion of what we call urban. Now, in this context, the professional committee internationally that deals with urban heritage, buildings, and so on, and also adaptive reuse is ICOMOS. So now I'm going to ask Poonam Trambadia, Associate Professor at Anant National University and the Regional Chair of ICOMOS India for Western India. Poonam, over to you.
Thank you, Professor Gallan, and good evening to everybody. And it's my pleasure because Anant, ICOMOS, and conservation are all close to my heart. So today I would like to talk something about what ICOMOS has shared this year, which is talking about shared cultures, shared heritage, and shared responsibilities, and such an apt topic in this situation. Because though COVID-19 has come as a threat, it has actually at some platform united us all in fighting it. There have been numerous risks, disasters, and crisis situations in the world which the world is facing today, and which puts communities and cultures at a great risk. Disaster response is seen as an immediate action to risk management and mitigation. However, cultural preservation efforts also serves an important purpose of retaining sense of belonging and cultural identity. Several cases this year, not only COVID is of course global, but several cases of Kerala floods, tsunamis, Nepal earthquakes, the way Dr. Benny mentioned that climate changes. So yes, COVID has mobilized everybody at the same time, but it has been happening gradually. We have just not been looking at it. This has made us realize the importance of heritage resources and revival of community even more and more than before. Each calamity forces us to look at the traditional mitigation systems and learn from them and find new and competent measures. Most of the traditional knowledge systems, community practices, and heritage were based on adaptation, which were inherent with the natural environments and the nature, and the designed moved in coherence with each other. Conserving the environment was seen as a duty and a part of life, which was to be left in itself as an inheritance to the future generations. Here I would like to mention an example of a small village in Maharashtra, Lonar, which we had taken up for documentation of monuments. Once we went into the detail of it, we found out such beautiful coordination with nature, culture, and historic structures. The village and the monuments which we were documenting there, the crater was formed by a meteorite. And because it was a meteorite crater, somehow the land which was affected by the meteorite has some beautiful qualities which are environmentally effective and has a lot of medicinal qualities in the vegetation of that lake. It is surrounded by 14 to 15 different temples of Shiva and Krishna. And so the culture, so the meteorite, it has myths, it has mythology, it has science. Myth is that Lavanasura, Krishna threw Lavanasura, and that is why the crater was formed. And so there are so many temples around it to worship it. The science is that it is a meteorite crater, and so it is very, very important. So this is where we saw the understanding of science, of culture, of myths, of tangible, of intangible, coming so beautifully together. The village has its own stepped waters, wells, water bodies, etc., etc. And the historic constructions are still visited by the tourists and have equal importance both in terms of scientific community as well as the cultural communities. But through ages, the continuous exploitation of natural resources, and neglect of rural areas, the increasing urban population and the situation of poverty, insanitation and general disregard of the environment has increased the susceptibility to risks. A well-conserved heritage, talking about these traditional and cultural knowledge systems, is necessary for responding to this natural, man-made and biological balance. According to the UN Agenda 2030, culture has an important role as an enabler to SDGs, the Social Sustainable Development Goals, which emphasizes the relevance of heritage, creativity and nature for sustainable development. What if, as a conservation architect, I ask that we take conservation not as a profession, but adopt it as a approach to life. As its underlining ethics says, minimal intervention, reuse with adaptation, restore and renew before new. Retaining the available resources itself means reduction of disposal, minimalized use of new resources, and not increasing pressures on urban infrastructure. Urban growth centers have their own place in global expansion, but clearly the focus needs to be both on urban and rural fronts. The solutions cannot be piecemeal and will have to be looked in holistically. Diverse countryside and localized settlements provide ground for cohesive balance of local resources and global learning for sustainable development. A well-conserved natural and historical environment based on traditional skills considerably reduces the risk factors and strengthens the resilience of community. At times, the crisis, access and care for heritage may help people regain a sense of community, dignity and empowerment. In the case of Patan, which was merely seen as a small town of Gujarat in receiving world tourism, today and with it, practices of sari weaving, wood-carved buildings, forts and temples are gathering more and more emphasis. An initiative of Khadi, a handmade fabric, which was nationwide freedom movement, has transformed into a sustainable agro-based business by Udyog Bharati in Gondal. Evolving your own lifestyle as per your region, climate adaptation and tailor-made solutions can go a long way in build infrastructure and architecture design. Temporary low cost to be replaced with long-lasting locally and manageable available resources. Traditional building technologies do have such answers. Capacity building and training at grassroots level is one of the most necessary things, because we talk so much about global, and as again Dr. Benny said, a lot of things are still elitist. They need to be brought down to the community. They need to be brought down to the grassroots level. And each and every one at every level needs to be trained. The city of Ahmedabad today is fighting with COVID, also has kept a special focus on the walled city due to its dense habitation pattern. The city has thriving life practices like Matani Pacheri, wood craftsmanship, manufacturing of instruments, etc., which can also be seen as an opportunity for cultural and economic recovery tool post-disaster. Learning from these traditional knowledge systems about health and immunity, boosting with local products and practices, and explore our diversity and find a meaningful way to integrate it in profession, lifestyle, and learning is what I would like to say today. Thank you.
Thanks, Poonam. That's you built on really nicely from Dr. Benny's, you know, context, the way he said it. And one of the most important things that you mentioned in relation to poverty, local communities, is the whole question of how do communities regain their sense of self-esteem, their dignity? Is what does sense of place mean in a post-COVID situation? I think these are some really serious issues, because that sense of self-esteem is critical for health and well-being. So there's a direct connection between what Australian Aboriginal people for a long time been advocating, the relationship between heritage, health and well-being in a post-COVID situation. Thank you. Now, you know, let's see how civil society, you know, can engage with this, and especially with the next generation. We have Tejashvi Jain, the founding director of Reviti Foundation, very young but doing amazing work in, you know, education and extensions, you know, more not just outreach like from a big institutions outwards, but actually creating a balance, you know, an equilibrium in the way she engages with education, museums. Over to you, Tejashvi.
Thank you very much, Professor Galla and Anant University, for inviting me on this panel. It was lovely hearing my fellow panelists, and thank you all from across the world to coming on and listening to us. I would straight like to jump into how museums and cultural institutions that serve the public figure out what next, given the situation we are in, because most of these institutions, if not prove themselves adding value to their stakeholders and to their communities, will in the next 1 year permanently shut down. How do we not get into that situation? Across everybody's mind, especially in the institution, at the institutional level, there's one major thought which comes: how are we going to generate the revenue required to sustain assets? You have no ticket sales, you have your rentals gone, you have your shows been cancelled, there are no donations or grants coming. How on earth are we going to survive? The most important thing in this, I think, is to relook and revisit what your original purpose of setting up this institution was. And along with that, I think the most pertinent question today, which we should be asking ourselves, is how do we stay relevant? Not just for today, but for the next few generations to come. This is a wonderful opportunity to relook at these two important points. To begin with, I'm a very pragmatic person. I want to just straight give on the practical issues which one needs to deal with in running an institution, which would be to classify your non-essentials and your essentials, or your need or must to have, your need to have, and the nice to have. And based on that, make your judgments. One of the other things which also is a major factor is your fixed costs and your salaries. Fixed costs, the way to address is to cut corners. And like Professor Dr. Benny Kurioko said, that reuse, recycle, repurpose what is there. That's the way we could move forward and cut the costs in our fixed costs. The other and most important worry of all institutions is how do we retain our staff, which is the most important, or it's the lifeblood, lifeline of organizations which are heavily service-oriented. It would be nice if governments could come up with a plan like the PPP plan, which is the Paycheck Protection Program. Or the other way is to have sustained pay cuts for a short duration, so which focuses on the retaining of the institution and the keeping it alive, and everybody then takes or contributes towards that. So a sense of ownership is built to in this entire process. I would like to point out three scenarios, say from immediate, which would be scenario one, which is now to the first 1 month, where hopefully we come out with a cure or an effective way to treat the COVID present situation. In that case, museums would be open to the public. The question would then be, how do we get the visitors in? How would we ensure that their safety is our safety and our priority? That's something which we really need to look into and communicate it to our audiences as well. Second, probably have an attraction or a new piece or new work, which could be the center of attraction, and then market it well so that gets in new footfalls and new people to come in. There was a question as how do we get the visitors who we've already lost, how do we regain them and bring them back to the museums? And also, along with that, to bridge the gap between the revenue which comes out of this and the money which is actually needed is fundraising. A little bit about that in the next scenario, which would be, say, for the next 3 to 6 months, where there is partial restraint. So the services have been opened, but malls, multiplexes, museums are not open, and there is no audience coming in. How do we deal with that kind of a situation? Funders who usually would fund programs or projects would be requested for operational funding to sustain the organization. The focus then would be just to retain and just keep the institution alive. Some hard decisions on let going of some of the staff at the cost of retaining the institution might also be something which will have to be considered. The third scenario is, fingers crossed we don't ever reach that stage, would be where we do not have the cure or there is a relapse of COVID. What then? Museums may be shut for a year, or cultural institutions cannot perform for a year. What then? I think the only answer to that is the government needs to come to the rescue. Having said that, everybody would flock for the government to come to their rescue. How do we then make our case that our institutions require their support? I would like to sum it up by saying, or keeping in mind, two words. One is creating value for your audiences and the communities you serve. Not just creating value, but documenting it is very important, which lot of institutions neglect. And the second one is resource efficiently. You need to use your resources very effectively. Again, the whole thing of repurpose, reuse, collaborate, and recycle what is within your community. I would like to end my talk by saying, by quoting Helen Kepler, where says, "Alone we can do so little, but together we can do so much." Thank you.
Well said, Tejashwi. Thank you. I mean, that I think you gave some very practical suggestions. And by the way, for the audience, Tejashwi works at the coalface, if you will, with her fingers in the dirt most of the time. So she's giving us what she sees as different scenarios and very practical ones. And thank you. And I think that all the three panelists, in a way, you know, have brought different perspectives. I just lost you for a minute. perspectives, but you know, very innovative and creative with the way they're thinking. And Benny, thanks for setting the scene, you know, with climate change as the non-negotiable tomorrow. How do we address it? And Poonam, through case study and demonstration, how do we move forward professionally? And Tejashwi with the scenarios. Now, I'm going to look at the Q&A box. Oh, that's great. We have Ganga Rautela, the former Director General of National Council of Science Museums, who is on the legal committee of ICOM Paris, but also he was involved, he chaired the Digitization Committee for India. His main thing is, given the global situation of the economic side, how do heritage institutions, how are they going to cope with in the next 2 years? I think Tejashwi has actually answered that question really eloquently. But he raises a follow-up question. Will heritage be a priority for nations in coming future who will struggle to stabilize economically? Because for so long, we've been arguing with governments that heritage matters, you know, valuing heritage is important. I still remember a debate in Australia where, you know, Department of, you know, Finance said what value in financial terms. And then we had to argue from, you know, from the cultural value side, you know, so finance versus cultural value. And then Professor David Throsby, the leading thinker on cultural economics, making an argument that we have to learn to use contingency valuation, choice modeling methodologies to value, you know, the non-quantifiable, you know, dimension of the value of culture, not always the quantifiable. So Gangaji, hope, you know, that we will stabilize soon. Can a fund be created? Maybe, how can help museums and staff who have lost their wages? Again, Tejashwi has answered that question. Different ways we could rethink, payback. Can a fund be created? Well, it's up to institutional governments, but certainly, as she emphasized, you know, governments have to play a very significant role. Wow, Ganga, you got so many one questions. How do we bring back visitors? I think Tejashwi once again answered that. She basically said, you know, how do we reimagine, you know, how do we actually, what is it that we offer, the relevance, and also whatever we propose to do in future, you know, can we do it differently? Can we do it in an innovative way so that we create value? Because it's not going to be easy to bring back people. Then the Shaheen Vatwana, what about two guides? I mean, the informal economy is the one that we always forget in this context. Huge. I think all the panelists have referred to it. In a country like India, you know, 80% of the people who work in the tourism sector work in the informal economy. And the guides are an integral part of that informal economy. How can they adapt to a situation like this? That's a question. I'm going to give a chance for the panelists to answer some of these, if you can make a note of it. Rather than individually. And so Francesca Cardinale from Italy says, in Italy, the main issue that stops a real change towards sustainability and life cycles is the economic factor. So how do we go ahead if there is not convenience for anyone or just for a few people? It's a very important question, you know, sort of. This comes back to some of the discussions and debates that took place in Italy, where David Throsby played a seminal role. You know, the whole question of how do we do benefit analysis. So then the next question is, you have Kamel. Gosh, I forget, are you from Egypt or Morocco? I can't remember. My apologies that there are over 300 people registered, 182 people have logged in, others will listen afterwards. We have a fantastic range of people from 43 countries sending in questions, And we're trying to sort of, another question, I'm not going to refer to individual ones because Shavri Mehta in the background, our center manager, is consolidating the questions. How do industrial designers move forward? That's another question that's come privately. How do we integrate heritage and design thinking? So that's hopefully one of you can answer that. I think I'll leave it at that for the time being, get back to other questions as they come in. Would the panelists like to address some of these questions? Who would like to go first? Benny, go for it.
There was a question which somebody has raised about conservation and development. I'll just go to the question. Just give me a second. That is Kamel, I think, whom you said, either from Denmark. There can be an argument that a general tendency of reusing old buildings is an anti-heritage practices act, as this limits humans' creativity and contribution to the development of civilization, as well as limiting how architecture provides solutions to contemporary needs. This is why there is always a conflict between conservation and development. I'll try to answer this question. I think there is no conflict between conservation and development. Both can go together. And here with the COVID issue, as well as with the climate change issue, it is the people's lives which is more important than anything else, because that is why we have gone for the lockdown. People's lives are more important than the economic growth. So the notion of development, we have to put it in quotes. And that is why I said we have to have a controlled development, which is possible at the present stage only through conserving built heritage, because use less materials, use more labor, there is less greenhouse gas emissions. And whatever creativity it is, why should you contribute to so much to the greenhouse? It is time that we start doing it immediately, rather than 20 years down the line or 30 years down the line when the issue is out of control. There, instead of that, we might have to have 1 year lockdown. Millions of people will die. The situation will be very bad. So, this is not a thing which can be answered in a very short time. But I'm just trying to put it across as an issue which is COVID issue and climate change issue are very much related. One is related like that. But the lessons how we have dealt with COVID issue, it is time that the political leadership and the built heritage community looks at the climate change also. I try to say it in a short answer.
Yeah, thank you, Betty. Ramesh Bole has got a specific question for Poonam. Have you been able to see that, Poonam?
Yes.
Could you answer that, please?
Yes. Yes.
Read out the question so that everybody can hear first.
Hi, Ramesh. He's saying the craftsperson all across India are hard hit by the pandemic crisis. They have a status of entrepreneurs as per government. For India, who is a reality, are poor and thus are facing difficulty to obtain food, grain and cash relief. As a relief measures from government of India, example, Chanderi. What is their status in this situation? How is this being dealt with in Ahmedabad? It is being dealt with right now, as Benny very clearly said, that what is important right now are people. Whether they are craftsperson from heritage sector or they are local worksmen and labor, the primary objective right now has been to provide them, if possible, localize them and provide them with basic food, shelter and concerns of daily life. And the private sites and private owners have been asked to, if possible, if they can take care of their own laborers, their own skilled workers, and provide for their safety and food requirements. there is some part of documentation which is there with the municipal corporation in terms of mapping this heritage sectors and craftsperson. And hopefully when things come in a better situation for everybody, things can move forward. That is what I'll say.
Thank you, Poonam. There are so many questions coming in and comments coming in. Even if you can't answer all of them or take them all on, we will address them, and you'll have them in the record afterwards. But it's quite amazing, the participation. Now I think this one is for Benny. Benny, there are quite a few comments and questions asking, how do we actually deal with climate change and adaptability at the local site level, and at the same time deal with it economically?
It's a bit difficult to answer again in a short time, but I think this has to be dealt at a local level, but at a much, much larger community level. This is where the COVID issue is becoming. In India, the way we have tried to dealt with COVID crisis, where we, lot of community, everybody is involved. I mean, all it's not like being in a disaster. There are a lot of people are involved in a lot of issues, and that is where we have to do it at a local level. The policies have to undergo changes. The government has to step in. Government has to give priorities. The priorities have to change, whether we need a 2-hour track from Delhi and Bombay, or what we want is more of a, I mean, you have to redefine what is development. So but doing anything for a climate change issue, doing at the local level alone will not be sufficient, because it is some issue which affects the whole world. Except few countries near the Arctic, all others will be, especially countries like India, will be badly affected. So there are a lot of things which could be done. And any policy on that, we'll have to concentrate on conservation of built heritage, because anything, I mean, all these big development which you see outside our cities, like in Ghaziabad, all these tower blocks, they'll be becoming vertical slums in the next 10 or 20 years. Why are we building those things? Whereas the West is pulling down the apartment buildings. Why we are still building those things? So we have to, I mean, the government has to change its policies drastically. The interesting thing that you find is that we don't learn from the mistakes which other countries have committed. There are so many examples why multi-storied buildings or the high, I mean, 20-storied apartments and 25-storied apartments are causing problems. We have to look at de-densification. We have to look at de-urbanization. This is what my feel is. Government is putting money in big cities. Government should, and even in big cities, there is a difference. Government puts in more money in South Delhi rather than in North Delhi. In Chennai also, South Chennai gets more funds rather than North Chennai. So all these things have to change. We have to look at things. Our priorities has to change. Otherwise, like COVID, one day will come where climate change will dictate things to us, because it will become a question of life or survival. Let us not race towards such a situation. If we plan it now, we can try to do it now. Otherwise, I thought only my grandchildren will be affected by climate change, but now I'm very sure my children are going to get affected. If I live long enough, even I will get affected. Things have changed. I mean, but our community, except the climate scientists and few people, nobody is willing to listen about it. Mm-hmm. So that Thanks. Is why we have to have a drastic change in policy. All these theories on urbanization, housing and town planning, everything will undergo changes, because situation will undergo changes. We'll be forced to work. COVID is forcing us to do certain things. Not only after the lockdown period is over, even after that, we'll be forced to do things to survive. Museums are forced to do that. My office, I run a practice. I'm forced. when this is the situation. So let us plan it properly so that we tighten our belts properly so that we don't suffer.
That is Benny, thanks, Benny. I think in one way you're also saying, you know, something we've been talking about at Ananta National University, the whole question of relevance of present-day curriculum pedagogy. So the COVID situation is challenging people about that you can't, you know, as Professor Rohit Jigyatsu has mentioned here, he's emphasized that how, you know, that we have a tendency to work in silos. The message that's coming across very strongly is that we can't work in silos anymore. And Dr. Chalbe, you know, right at the beginning said we got to be interdisciplinary, we got to be holistic, as both Poonam and Tejashvi has said. So the question that Shreya Sudesh asks is, there are many places where there's site-specific conservation work that's being done, site works recovery. So how do we recover this? That's for Poonam. And I'm just going to read out about 3-4 questions. So Poonam, what are the thoughts on the stalled site works recovery? Then for Tejashvi, I have a question from all the way from Denmark, I think. Søren Pre Pedersen, how do we best document the experiences of COVID-19? And for research, for planning for the future, how do we best document it? And so the question that still keeps coming back from several people, I won't mention their names because it's a very long list. You know, they're basically saying, how do we rethink what kind of design thinking will be applied in future? Right? I mean, in Denmark, there's a thing called design is seen as design to improve life. So if life is going to be improved in post-COVID situation, what kind of design thinking are we talking about in heritage conservation and development? And where do we start? I mean, these are some of the fundamental questions that are coming. I'll leave it to first Poonam, then Tejashvi, and then come back to Benny saying, Benny, you work with everybody from different areas, but this silo mentality that we do have, if I could call it mentality in the French sense, that Professor Rohit Jigyatsu is talking about. If you could come in after Poonam and Tejashvi, I'd appreciate it. Okay, over to Poonam.
Thank you. Again, a difficult one to answer because not only site-specific, but as I also run a professional practice, and not only the sites, but yes, the practices are going to take time to open because people are wanting to come out and start their work, but there is also still going to be hesitancy when site work starts because people would be coming from different areas, different sectors and all. So there will new understanding policies of safety, security measures on site and off site. But I think so the attitude to start work and the professionals are also wanting that the work starts. So I don't think there is where the problem is. The problem would be that where would be the responsibilities, liabilities, how, because after this long lockdown, suddenly it's not going to start suddenly. It is going to take time. It is going to be slow. But I think things will start gradually. And an incomplete project is more a liability lying down than a complete project. So I don't think that is a bit of a...
Thanks, Poonam. Over to you, Tejashvi.
Could you repeat my question? Because I lost you in the middle.
I have to go back to the... How do we best document? The question is from Denmark. How do we best document the current COVID situation, the experiences, what's happening, and how we're dealing with heritage, for example, culture, so that we could use it for research for future planning?
I think the whole question lies, what is the need of the community and versus us versus them? I think to involve them in a process where we're looking at this situation together and involving them in the documentation process itself will bridge the gap between them and us. And in the process, the ownership also gets transferred, which then helps in sustaining the museum or the cultural institutions and taking it to the next level.
Thank you, Tejashwi. I think there's a challenge there because, as Dr. Ananya Chaube right in the beginning said, there's no us and them anymore. It's all of us. We're all in it together. So when we're in together, what kind of modes and modalities do we look at? So the next, what I'm going to do is read out some more questions. This is really interesting for Nabodita. It implies like when we're making choices in hospitals, do we use respirators for people who are the age of 80? We're making choices because of shortage of equipment. And so what kind of culture is one expecting to retain? Because of the economic crisis, the budget constraints, choices will be made. So how does one actually prioritize? How does one actually make sure that the elites don't gobble up all the resources that are there? I mean, it's a serious concern. If anybody wants to answer, the next thing is, this is from Jennifer Gator. The impacts on World Bank, UNESCO, UNDP, and others dedicated to culture and sustainable tourism. Do you think there'll be a shift of priorities for funding allocation? And that might penalize the sector because other areas seen as priority areas like health, education. You know, one of the biggest things to address with this current situation of lockdown is domestic violence. It's soared up phenomenally across the world. So this is a priority area that, you know, organizations like UNDP deal with. So funding will be shifted. So the question is, you know, will the shifting of priorities actually penalize the heritage? The other thing that's come up again and again here, can you hear me?
Yeah.
You can hear me? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that's come up again and again in questions is, now that we are getting comfortable with the digital platform, how are we going to get back to, you know, the situation of, you know, hands-on, you know, whether heritage conservation, design, architecture, as, you know, and appreciated by the public as the new normal, how are we going to do it? And so if the three of you could answer those questions, I would appreciate it. Benny, you want to go first?
Yeah. You see, I think I did not realize the importance of this Zoom and Hangouts and all these things, but now I find it very convenient to use. And this will help us. We will be able to save a lot of greenhouse gases which are emitted into the atmosphere, because air travel is responsible. 7% air travel is responsible. So if we cut down 50% of the air travel, because air travel is skyrocketing at a fast pace in India, at least. So many new airlines are coming up every week. It has become cheaper. All of the airlines are in crisis. So if we can just avoid maximum number of those things and have these online classes, instead of, if I want to take a class in Ahmedabad, why should I travel from Chennai to Ahmedabad spending so much money? I can take the class from my office in Chennai. It will be very convenient. Yeah. And that could be I'm also seriously thinking about working out this thing rather than going into the, you can record the conversation very comfortably. You can re-look at. So I think there is a definite future. And I'm also thinking that we should start working 50%, one day in the office and one day at home, so that you still meet the people. Design is a field where you need to meet the people regularly. So you should change your ways of working, which has to happen. I think it is that way it will be beneficial. Nothing much is, world is not going to collapse with the with some people working from home now.
Amar, thanks, Benny.
Amar, if I could come in with permission.
Sure, Dr. Chaubey.
Of course, you know, say there are many things that are going to happen for sure. Everything, you know, that we haven't imagined will happen. I'm wondering when in the future are we going to shake hands or give a hug to somebody? Are we going to travel in trains or are we not going to think twice before we board a bus? What is it going to do to human relationships? Aren't we going to be suspicious each time we look at somebody, think twice before, you know, taking your hand when you offer it to me out of reflex? And how long will it actually take us to get over this fear, this suspicion, become human again? You know, it's a lot. Technology will make everything possible. You know, so work will go on, life will go on, you know, so things go on. I think, you know, so the essence of existence being human is what's at stake here. And that is what we need to think about. You know, what we need to preserve is how to stay human, how not to lose the ceremonies of innocence that I had pointed out. That is the real challenge. You know, I think the subliminal, the soft, the gentle commerce of being human. Think about it, you know, say when I offer you my hand next time, you know, say when I see you on the street, won't you think twice? If I kind of open my arms wide, you know, to give you a hug, won't you step back? And how long before you actually hug me back? That is the question. That is what we should be thinking about, you know, say apart from lots of other things, you know, say the technology. Technology will handle everything. This is what I'm worried about. Thank you. So this was all that I had to say.
Thanks, Dr. Chaubey. That's really important. You know, how do we bring back that humanness? And Tejish, do you want to make a comment?
Someone said on the choices we make to preserve culture. I think from an institution point of view, I think I would go back to the purpose of that institution and again the relevance of its existence, which in the present scenario would be relooked and would change also. So if we keep these two things in mind, then I think our decision on what to preserve and how to preserve would be a lot more easier. Of course, there are many external factors and we need to work across industries and not just within the museum and the heritage sector, but across totally out of the box, different industries whom we would never have imagined to collaborate because they bring in a very different perspective and playing on each other's strengths would help us to take the next step and sustain ourselves. And the second one was the shift in priorities. Obviously, yes, we would be affected. The culture and heritage areas would be affected. And that's why it's a concern for all of us. And that's why we are having such webinars to brainstorm and to think how we can collectively come together and do our own bits in our own little ways to preserve and to get out of this collectively.
Thanks, Tejashri. Poonam, you want to add?
Same thing. I think technology is actually helping because why travel when you cannot? And the things which are actually practical and need to be done on site will have to be done on site. So I think people will move for that. I don't think there is any question for that. And something which we were running from one place to another thinking that, oh, this is important and that is important. I think this situation has taught us that something which can be handled from home can be handled from home. And yes, the priorities are going to shift and it is a concern, but then the priorities have always been a concern for heritage. And we have been pushing and saying heritage matters and we'll still keep on doing so. We might look at a new narrative collectively. But yes, and the world scenario in heritage also from the notion of monuments, the notion of heritage has completely shifted to communities, culture, sharing. And so if we move accordingly and make it our culture, I think things will happen. It's not a... Thank you.
Thank you, Poonam. There's interesting questions coming up on what Dr. Ananya Chaube mentioned about the personal, the human. Shruti, to give you an example, is asking the question, dear panelists, what role does fear and other emotions play in the process of decision making when it comes to heritage? Because, you know, this is a very important question. And then there's others who are asking the question that, you know, are we putting too much emphasis on the digital? Is that going to consume all our resources? Can we balance and also prioritize? Of course, yeah. And then there's Ashita Agrawal asking, is it possible to bring heritage buildings to regular use like residential and commercial use rather than just public use like museums and cafes? There you are. I don't know how you're going to answer that. Well, I'll leave you with those questions. You want to have some very quick answers because we're running out of time. And yeah, who wants to have
can
a go
I,
first?
Can I answer?
Yeah, sure, Poonam. Yeah.
Can I answer the last one?
Yeah.
See, the understanding of adaptive reuse has always been there. They have been promoted as museums and cafes because that has till now been the most effective way of communicating heritage. But as understood and as there is a priority, as there is the value attached to each building, and there is an understanding of how and to whom the importance of the heritage is. And yes, they can and should be, but with proper understanding, documentation and value of the structure, they can be used for other structures. And that is why the talk of use sustainability and conservation and adaptive reuse definitely supports that. It's just that understand the culture, the community, the purpose, the structure was built, and giving it its due importance, and then using it for whatever sustainable use it can be put to.
Thanks, Poonam. Tejashwi, do you want to chip in? Can you hear me, Tejashwi? All right, Benny, you go ahead. You have to unmute your mic.
I'll just try to answer the question you asked earlier, which Rohit Jigyasu has put.
Yeah.
That whether we are working in silos, which is a problem, which is one of the, especially in India, this is a huge problem. All the stakeholders don't work together. Even one stakeholder, say, for example, the government, one department doesn't know about the other department. So like we are in a very pitiable situation. If things are, these things are a bit difficult to change now, but it is high time that we reorient or redo the curriculum that we are having. Our curriculum is highly oriented towards architecture or planning or conservation. We don't learn much about the sociology. We don't learn about the anthropology. I'm talking about the architects and the planners and the designers. There is not much emphasis on sociology, anthropology, history, economics, psychology. The only institutions in India where it gives importance is the IITs, where 20% credits is for humanities subjects, starting from English, economics, history, even philosophy. They have courses on philosophy. And this is where the design universities, Anand National University, can take a lead. There are limitations of the COA, but it is important that take a lead and trying to have this multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary. So once our professionals become this interdisciplinary and multidisciplinary, a lot of things can change in that. For example, professionals like Rohit, Chikyasu, and me, we all learned after doing things. We didn't learn any of these things in our college curriculum or studies. We were completely ignorant, but we had to learn at one point, so we learned at that one point. So it's high time that we have educational curriculum, the school curriculum, the college curriculum has a lot to do, that it is important to realize why philosophy, psychology, anthropology, sociology are important. Let's try to work in a interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary approach. Then a lot of things can be done. And even with the government, the decision should be taken in a professional manner, not in an ad hoc manner, because one minister wants or one IAS senior wants it like that. Once the things, decision-making mechanism in the government changes, things will change in India. I'm very hopeful.
Thank you, Benny. That's good to start finishing on that optimistic note. I think everything you said, Dr. Ananuya Chaubey is back. I mean, he's very passionate about rethinking the curricula, taking a holistic interdisciplinary approach. And I think that's also coming back to India after 43 years. That shocked me is how people work in silos, like Professor Jigyatsu mentioned. There's no future for that kind of silo work. And so thank you for emphasizing that. Now, I'm just going to wind up now because we're reaching the limit of our time. But in doing that, I just want to say over 300 people registered, nearly 200 people logged in, then people have family and other commitments on a Saturday. So we still have 143 people engaged. And there are many questions that have come up which we are not able to answer right now, but we'll follow up. But there are three things that seem to be, you know, generically very strong. One is, do we have to go back to those fights between conservation versus development? You know, because we did have to, you know, make an argument 20 years ago, you know, in our heritage disciplines. It's not either our situation. It is actually taking a whole, you know, integrated approach to it. But because of the competing priorities that will emerge, once again, this issue is going to come back. So that's one concern that's there. The other concern that's coming through is, in fact, there's several comments that people are worried that, you know, in the post-COVID situation, I don't want to think about a third scenario, Tejashwi. I want to be optimistic. And in the post-COVID situation, will culture be a priority for governments, which are competing priorities? And so we will address this in a future webinar that Dr. Ananuya Chaubey and I are going to do on the whole question of culture resourcing, you know, sort of during in times of crisis. Many countries, like Germany is the one that stands out, having allocated $50 billion for culture. Some countries have seen it as non-negotiable. But many other countries haven't had a chance to think about it. But then you got to remember, Germany is a very rich country, and it's good that they're prioritizing it. There are many other countries which are struggling with a whole range of other issues. And the third thing that seems to be coming across is the living heritage, the intangible heritage, that, you know, people will focus on the tangible in the rehabilitation because it's more, you know, like, you can say these are objects and these are sites and these are buildings. And that living heritage, in all its manifestations, intangible heritage, will it be prioritized? Will it be even considered? I mean, that's a very strong concern that's coming across. And with that, I just got 1 minute. And each one of you, if you want to say something for 10 seconds, one sentence, Benny, one
sentence. No, I something. Just will pass on the mic to...
Tejashwi, unmute your mic, yeah.
I just wanted to say thank you, everybody, and it was a pleasure listening to all of the panelists and the wonderful questions which came up. And we will be happy to answer all of them, and happy to reach out. If you guys want to reach out to any of us, we would be happy to take it forward.
Thank you. Tejashwi, Poonam, do you want to say anything?
No, just thank you. Thank you so much to connect internationally sitting at your home is a pleasure. So thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you all. And let me say one thing. No vice chancellor, president of a university starts off and still is there right at the end, and Dr. Ananya Chaubey is still there And maybe I should say the final word to you, Dr. Anunuya Chaudhary.
Thank you, Amar. And thank you, everybody, for being here with us. Like I said right at the start, it's quite heartening. And best wishes to you all. Stay cheerful, but stay careful and believe in the future. There might be some suspicion starting out, but we'll all rally together. We'll all come around and we will make things happen. Thank you so much. See you next time.
Thank you, Dr. Chaudhary. Thank you, everybody, all the panelists, and especially the participants, but also behind the scenes, Vishal Bhai, who made the technology work, and Shavari Mehta, who is, you know, passing on the questions in both the chat and boxes and question and answer boxes. Everybody who has come together, there's still 132 of you online. Thank you so much. And we're going to come back to you with the next Heritage Matters webinar, which is going to focus on a question that we haven't addressed: sustainable heritage tourism. You know, if tourism doesn't kick back, where are the resources going to come back? So we're going to do a whole webinar with four professors who are dealing with heritage tourism from four different countries. And we'll inform all of you by email. Thank you and have a nice day. Take care. Be safe. Yeah. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.